My guest today, Dana Johnstone, is an American journalist based in Paris, whose writings focus primarily on European politics and Western foreign policy. She was active in the movement against the Vietnam War, organizing the first international contacts between American citizens and Vietnamese representatives. Most of her adult life has been spent in France, Germany, and Italy, from where she worked from 1979 to 1990 as European editor of the U.S. Weekly In These Times. She was also press officer for the Green Group in the European Parliament from 1990 to 1996. She has published several books, among them The Politics of Euromissiles, Europe's Role in America's World in 1985, and Fool's Crusade, Yugoslavia, NATO, and Western Delusions in 2003, which challenged the official narrative of the Bosnian War and the destruction of Yugoslavia, and Queen of Chaos, a critical examination of Hillary Clinton, published by Counterpunch, for whom she is a frequent contributor, about which I interviewed her in 2015. This is, I believe, her fifth appearance on this program, with one in 2007 live from her Paris apartment. This morning I reached her in Normandy, where it is 20 past 6 in the evening. Welcome, Dana Johnstone, back to Takes on the World.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's always a pleasure to hear from you, an old friend and who has been doing the job for so many years. You wrote an article in Counterpunch back in February about the forthcoming French election. You called it, the title was France, Another Ghastly Presidential Election Campaign, The Deep State Rises to the Surface. And you pointed out that even well before you pointed out that despite the mechanisms of the French presidential election being superior to ours, in the end, the results appear to be similar. And that the French begin to copy a lot of American traditions in our presidential elections. And now that the election has taken place and we have seen Macron defeat Marine Le Pen, what do you now think of the comparison between the two countries' elections and what turned out happened in France?
Well, I think I had a second article on the election after the one you mentioned, which was called about the governance, the fact that this election, the issue was really the democracy versus global governance, and it's global governance that has won in the person of Macron. And I think the contrast, but I want to say a lot about the sociology of this French election. But basically, you have a globalist ruling class with the deep state, and you have Europe, which is still in the state of being occupied ever since World War II. Don't forget that. I mean, Germany and Italy are still militarily occupied ever since the end of World War II. Now, Russia had its zone and it gave it up, but the United States has kept its zone and is expanding. So there is not just a sort of an influence because, oh dear, you know, that's interesting in the United States, let's copy it. No, I mean, there is the United States has a very directive role in European politics. But I think there's a big difference between the two elections because the globalized elite and the deep state lost the presidential election to an outsider. And what happened in France is that the deep state and the globalized elite won the election. And they won the election by an incredible amount of effort, an all-out advertising campaign to present Macron as somebody new and fresh and young and et cetera, et cetera. And it was just an astounding victory of the advertising industry that sold this man, who in fact had been responsible for very unpopular policies in his short time in the so-called socialist government of President Hollande. And that government was so disgraced that Hollande, the president, broke all tradition, didn't even dare run again. But his protege, Emmanuel Macron, who came from the same government, was presented as something completely new and marvelous. And he was on, I think it was like 70 magazine covers from the time that he announced his candidacy. He was absolutely sold like a new product. And this worked. So that's the contrast between the United States and France is just that the globalized elite won the election, and in the United States they sort of lost it, but they're trying to make up for that, as you can notice, by planning to impeach Trump and get back in the top place where they feel they belong.
Well, it's interesting that we had a situation in this country of lesser of two evils, and of course Le Pen with the National Front, that party had a long reputation, which Trump had another kind of reputation here. But it's interesting that there is the left candidate Mélenchon actually did not endorse Macron and left it up to people to do their own decision. But we see Macron has an anti-labor position that's sure to come to cause crisis with the French unions in the very short future. I mean, he's called for re-examining pensions, changing the work week, doing everything that favors corporate France in order to do what actually Trump was saying, is to make France competitive again.
Yeah. Well, I don't see it exactly like that. And that's why I say I want to talk about the sociology of this election. Because you're talking in the terms of left and right, which is exactly the terms that are becoming not so relevant. You see, the Macron machine. You see, for years you've had two parties here. They changed the names. I mean, on the right now it's called Les Républicains, the Republicans, to imitate the United States. And the Socialist Party was like the American Democratic Party. It wasn't the slightest bit socialist, and it was scarcely democratic. And you see, there was an alternance between those parties, but they both ended up doing the same things. And that's sort of going on all over the place, because whatever they say they're going to do, they end up trying to put through neoliberal policies that weaken labor and strengthen financial capitalism. The Macron machine, which was very cleverly worked and very well financed by the very top billionaires, although they don't say that, but it's obvious from where he came from. And I've written about this in a few articles for Counterpunch. You can see his whole career, especially the second one about governance, where he came from. And this operation has wrecked the two main parties. For one thing, it took the leadership of the Socialist Party simply was absorbed by Macron's movement called En Marche. So the Socialist Party has just, except for a small left part of it, which ran in the election with no hope and lost the left vote to Mélenchon, whereas the right party was ruined by scandals which were revealed very timely, which suggests some kind of inside revelations about the right-wing candidate giving jobs to his wife and children. Which really are not as great as all that, but it ruined the right candidate, and now the new government of Macron has a right wing prime minister and is taking it right wingers. So he has crippled both the Socialist Party, and the Republican Party. And he's made his big center, which is logical in a way, because both of those parties were pretty much doing the same thing. And now he's going to do it, but much more so, because much more radically. He is much more, he has said so, that he's going to tear down the labor laws much faster than he was able to do when he was a minister of economics in the Hollande government. But you see, so now have this big center, and the working class vote, or you could say what you, is totally split between Mélenchon on one side and Marine Le Pen on the other. And now I say I want the sociology of this election.
To go into that, yes.
No, it's very interesting, because Macron is presented as the vote of the party of youth and so on in the future. The fact is that the biggest percentage of votes he got were from people 65 years old or more, or professionally in the category of what they call cadre, meaning executives, really, and the superior intellectual professions. He got 83% of that vote, of the intellectual ruling class, 80% of 65 and over, partly because they talk by Mélenchon and Marine Le Pen about leaving the euro frightened a lot of retired people that it would hurt their pensions. Okay, so you have 83% of the top class, which is intellectual, because these days, after all, you know very well that the ruling class now is not the old rich or the oldest. It's the meritocracy. It's the people with the most education who get into the top positions and so on. Then let's look at the working class vote. The working class voted 65% for Marine Le Pen. Now, of course, you'd say, oh, well, that proves the working class is fascist. And that is the ideology that this superior intellectual class...
What was that percentage for Le Pen, for the working class vote?
63%.
Ooh. Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that you see the superior intellectual class creates the ideology in this country, and the ideology is that that the danger is fascism and racism. And the working class, we don't have to feel too sorry for them, because since they vote for Marine Le Pen, obviously they're fascist and they deserve what's coming to them. Now, the fact is that Marine Le Pen is not fascist, and that's something I hardly dare say, because it's so much the religion of the left, that all the left has left is to say, we're against fascism. And when there isn't any fascism to be against, they are ready to believe somebody who said, oh, that's a fascist. Oh, goody, goody, we can be anti-fascist. They're not seeing that the real problem is this globalized elite, which is totally transforming the world. And also there's a military side to it, but that's enough for a moment.
The military factor, meaning that Macron is a strong supporter of NATO and the anti-Russian hysteria that has swept the United States.
Well, yes, that's it. And he just announced his government, and it's very interesting that his new foreign minister isn't even called that. It's called the Minister of Europe and Foreign Affairs, which shows how much he is going to be completely having no French foreign policy, you see. It's going to be the Western French policy, foreign policy. The fact that the minister, this has never been called that before, the Minister of Europe and Foreign Affairs, that puts Europe ahead. That means that France will be totally a part of the Western mechanism, don't you see? That's a degree of subjugation of French independence that I haven't seen before. And he also chose a woman who, Sylvie Goulard, who is a member of the European Parliament, to be Minister of the Armies and of Defense. And he chose to ride in his inauguration in a military vehicle down the Champs-Élysées, which is nobody else has done that before. So he's giving a very militaristic, aggressive tone to his campaign, as well as being totally subjugated to the Western ideology.
So he's first going to meet with Merkel, Angela Merkel, to kind of plan the future for the European Union.
Pardon?
He's going to be meeting with Angela Merkel.
Of course, he already has.
Oh, they've already met. I know they had spoken. I didn't know they had met.
He rushed to Mama Merkel, Mutti, and was embraced because he's so pro-European. And now the question is whether he can get any concessions from the Germans to change policy so that you'll have an economic policy that isn't destroying France. Because actually, and you see, this is, now to get back to the other side, the other side of this was not exactly left or right. It was a little bit of both, but it's the sovereignists. It's those who the losers here were Marine Le Pen and Mélenchon, whose programs were extremely similar. I mean, they were practically the same. But both of them were, in fact, for independence from the Euro and from the European Union. Because both of them have realized, and when I say both of them, on the Marine Le Pen side, I really mean her main advisor, who has totally changed the policy of the National Front. His name is Florian Philippot. He happens to be gay. I mean, it's not a big issue. He just happens to be. And he comes from the left. And he has made the analysis, and Mélenchon the same, you cannot have social policies within the European Union as it is now. The European Union now is an instrument of globalization, of free trade, as they say, meaning that finance capital goes wherever it wants, under the terms that it wants, and ends up, in fact, pretty much shaping society, because investments shape society. And so when finance capital rules, there is really democracy left. And the curious thing is that you have the same analysis made by Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who comes from the left, and Florian Philippot, who also comes from the left, but became the real mentor of Marine Le Pen and has designed the policy, which is causing. I think the plan was, in any case, for Marine Le Pen for that party to be abandoned for a different name, but there's a lot of dissension in it. But the point is that Philippot realizes that you can't have have an independent policy. You can't have independence as long as the ideology that dominates in this country is to hate France, and that has been the ideology for 30 years. That France is guilty because of World War II. It was awful. Everybody is better than we are, especially the immigrants. And this attitude makes it impossible for the French to even imagine being independent and sovereign. So, you
say self-hatred? Self-hatred?
Well, there is a sort of national self-hatred. It began really, you could say a big part of it began with Bernard-Henri Lévy, who writes absolute nonsense. But you see, he's terribly influential. He has a huge role in various media. He really sets the tune. Even though everybody hates him, it ends up, his 30 years ago or something, he wrote the ideology, the French ideology, that France is essentially fascist, he said. Now, it's very funny because at the time in the 30s when various countries were fascist, France was not. And it's never been a fascist. But for Bernard-Henri Lévy, it's really the deep down thing about France is that it's fascist. And this guilt is used all the time. And the result of the guilt is we must belong to Europe. We must follow Europe. Anything that says we should be independent is nationalism. Nationalism means fascism. Fascism means Hitler, means the Holocaust, blah, blah, blah. That sort of propaganda goes on and on and on. And it was used to scare people away from voting. Well, certainly from voting for Marine Le Pen, but also for voting for Mélenchon, because they're talking about being independent, and you have these little tough guy groups here that go beat people up that are called, they call themselves the anti-fascists. You know, remember when there was fascism, there were gangs of fascists who would beat up people that didn't agree with them. That doesn't exist now, but there are anti-fascists who do that.
We have so that here.
So this whole thing about talking about fascism here is simply a propaganda tool on behalf of the ruling class.
Well, that's a very, very interesting take. You mentioned we do have the Antifa here. I don't know where they have been during the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, but they certainly weren't out in the streets demonstrating against the wars. But they are now breaking up meetings of speakers who they don't like, or I don't happen to like. But this is the kind of tactics they have accused fascists of doing, and they're doing the very same thing here.
Well, it's not exactly the same kind of things that they. I mean, you have a lot of you have issues over there that are only developing here that aren't so developed here. But I can give you Macron, by the way. This is interesting. He aside from robbing people off the Socialist Party and the Republican Party, he has his own party, which he says is just people. He's just civil society, he calls it. I mean, he's just getting people who haven't done politics before, but of course they happen to represent this intellectual elite, this meritocracy that will certainly follow his lead, because these people, you see, they don't care about the working class. France in the last generation has lost 40% of its industry. That means it's lost 40% of its working class, even more. And so the working class is very weak. So you say, oh, well, they'll get out in the streets, blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe, yes, they'll get out in the streets, but that doesn't mean that they're going to win anything. Because the relationship of forces is now totally against them, because the workers are the same with the farmers. They are committing suicide one every other day. These lower classes, they don't matter to the superior intellectual classes who adore Europe. They adore globalization. They love to travel. They love the exoticism of it all. They love to feel superior to dictatorships and lecture people about human rights, and they don't care a bit about the underdogs in their own country, because they must be racist or because if they don't like us, they're racist. And the first person that that Macron vetoed for his new list of his own representatives, because for the elections that are coming up very shortly, and there's only one of his civil society that he vetoed, and that's a film director who directs movies on television, and he was vetoed because LICRA, the
yes,
anti-Semitic watchdog organization, and him accused him of anti-Semitism because he had endorsed the BDS movement.
Boycott, divestment, and sanctions. By the way, I mean, I should say my guest I'm speaking with is Diana Johnstone. If we're speaking from Normandy in France about the French elections and what it means. So please go on, Diana. Yeah.
Yeah. So you see, this is another thing that is like the anti-fas. Anything that can be called anti-Semitism, of course, has to be banned. And there, this is interesting because it's the first. Michael invited people who've never been in politics to run for election for the National Assembly, right? It was a big invitation. And one of these was this director who's and he was, by a complaint from LICRA, the International League Against
Semitism and Racism.
Anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Well, they added racism very late in their history.
Yeah.
It's an old organization that was from the 1920s or something. But one complaint from LICRA, and this guy is not acceptable. And the reason was that he had endorsed the movement of boycott, sanctions, disinvestment against Israel. So you see where this government stands is very clear. It stands for stronger military, stronger adhesion to Europe and the West, and loyalty to Israel, and it's anti-Russian. So you see where it is. And what is interesting is that of the four leading candidates at the beginning of the election, and the one who had the four most votes in the first round, three of those four wanted to improve relations with Russia, did not want to go on trying to overthrow Assad in Syria. Three or four of them. And in fact, I think that is public opinion. But this huge machine has managed to elect the candidate out of 11 that is the most aggressive toward Russia, the most pro-NATO, and they managed to do this by creating this huge scare of fascism in the person of Marine Le Pen. That's the way they got the vote, people to vote against their beliefs and against their interests.
Well, that's very interesting. I have to be on this side of the ocean. It takes me something for me to see the National Front in a different light because I had some experiences with them some years ago in Paris. So,
but what experiences with whom and what? I've told you, it's completely changed.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
What
yeah, I'm saying. But I know what she was saying and what Mélenchon was saying were quite similar. But how much of this has to do with immigration, the impact of immigrants on the French labor market?
Well, you know, in that sense, Marine Le Pen was taking up the position that used to be position of Georges Marchais, the head of the Communist Party. Was always, and as a matter of left in most countries, has always been against mass immigration because it brings down wages. That's notorious. Everybody knows that. But there's an extra thing to mass immigration in Europe, and that is that it's, you find people, I mean, they say this, it's very there's a political, ideological goal in mass immigration, not just economic, because there are no jobs here anyway. I mean, you have unemployment already, and I say industry is dying. But there is also an ideological goal, which is to dilute the sense of nation, because that will help strengthen the European Union. I mean, that's people like Daniel Cohn-Bendit say this very emphatically in speeches. This is not something I'm making up. You know, let's have all these foreigners, and then there won't be any more French people left. This is so. This business about immigration is pretty complex. And of course, if you just take the human rights, you say, oh, poor immigrants, you don't know who they are. Some of them are poor immigrants, some of them aren't. And you just say, oh, well, there's immigrants. As a human rights person, you must be for them. Well, you see, the rich are all for that because they never ran into the immigrants. It doesn't bother them at all. And then when they see that the lower class people who actually have the immigrants coming into their neighborhoods, taking their jobs, et cetera, well, they are racist. So the superior classes have adopted this view to be in favor of sans-papiers, undocumented workers, et cetera, gives them a sense of satisfaction. They don't pay anything for it.
Interesting. I'm just thinking of the whole immigrant situation just out in France or Europe. How much of this, all these problems and the changes in Europe, stem, do you think, from the U.S. invasion of Iraq?
No.
Is that a real connection?
Well, of course, obviously the refugee situation stems from that, but it also stems from very much from the destruction of Libya, which
your friend Bernard Henri Lévy was a drum beater for. I'm not saying your friend, but BHL was the big drum beater in France for taking out Gaddafi.
Yes, exactly. He grabbed one of the revolutionaries, which in fact was an official that was betraying the government, brought him to Paris and said, oh, you know, he must do this. Yeah, in fact, he said once that he did it because he was Jewish. Now, I mean, he's like, I don't know exactly what he means, but he seems to mean that, you know, he has a right, he has a mission to change the world or something. But yes, of course, so France was involved in that. And these wars, of course, create lots more immigrants than you would have normally. That's obvious.
Well, I know the Libyan thing, actually the combination of Iraq and then Libya, which, of course, Hillary Clinton was a cheerleader on this side of the water for that one, which was forgotten in the election. But is there the possibility or the likelihood of a resistance from what there is of the working class, or are the unions divided at this point in France?
The unions are divided. You see, there were a lot of people, certain people who say they're big leftists, one of them is Roussin, who says, oh, well, I'm going to vote for Macron and then I'll fight him afterwards. Well, good luck, because I don't know how he's going to fight. These people have no idea of the relationship of forces. You're up against an enormous, powerful machine, and you say, oh, well, I'm going to go out in the street and fight him. Well, you know, fine. That's not going to change it. No, I'm very skeptical, because I don't think that going out in the streets really accomplishes very much. Tell me if I'm wrong, but, you know, there's a myth on the left that it does something, but it doesn't. If you don't end up with a political movement to take power, it just, people get left feel great, feel they're doing something, feel they're getting somewhere, and then they're disappointed and they go away, and that's it.
And that's it. We're not left with many alternatives. And what about the Mélenchon people of this picket? We have just a couple minutes. What about Mélenchon and his supporters at this point?
Well, we have to wait and see about the elections. It's going to be difficult because, you see, he has to create a party that isn't the Socialist Party and
that's
have these
Macron,
people known so
yeah.
people can vote for them. So we'll wait and see how he does in the elections, if he gets enough of a voice in the parliament to say anything. One could hope so, but nothing is sure at this point.
Well, it looks like any last words, but I assume we're going to be talking again. I really appreciate your outlook because it is something that people here are probably not prepared for because they have been conditioned in the same old ways of seeing things in the Cold War mentality, and that it doesn't apply today very much.
Actually, the whole of the West is like that. So, I'm not surprised. It's not because I'm over here or I wouldn't be over there. It's just that I know, and it's very annoying to see how much this whole election has been spun in an ideological way to idolize Macron, who is the favorite of the power system.
Well, Diana, I want to thank you so much for being our guest again today on Takes on the World. I look forward to speaking with you again after the French elections to see how things fall out and because what France is going to be doing since we have this guy who needs to show his make his chops in as a macho man now in power in France. We're going to see what confrontations we may be heading for in the not-too-distant future. So thanks so much for being our guest today. Diana Johnstone, speaking from Normandy. Enjoy.
Okay.
Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye. Same to you.
Bye-bye. This is Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.